When Kevin Rudd delivered the national apology in his first term as Prime Minister in 2008, he dressed an open wound that was infecting the nation's conscience. For years, his predecessor, John Howard, had steadfastly refused to use that word, sorry. And that's something that many stolen generations can't forgive. For almost the entire Howard era, sorry truly was the hardest word. In that stalemate, the non-apology became a political issue rather than what it should have been, a simple matter of taking responsibility and the trigger for a process of making amends. In many ways, the damage had already been done when Kevin Rudd stepped forward to deliver the national apology, but he did succeed in laying the foundation to another chapter in the story and to set the country on a track where the truth could be told. The Healing Foundation is a national organisation set up in the aftermath of the national apology. And Richard Weston, my next guest, is its chief executive officer. But to begin, let's hear some of that historic speech in the federal parliament in 2008, witnessed by members of the Stolen Generations and their families in the public gallery and on the lawns outside.
But as of today, the time for denial, the time for delay, has at last come to an end. Mr. Speaker, the nation is demanding of its political leadership to take us forward. Mr. Speaker, decency, human decency, universal human decency, demands that the nation now steps forward to right an historical wrong. And that is what we are doing in this place today.
It's very vivid in my memory. I was in Broken Hill in far west New South Wales with around 300 or 400 other community members in a big hall, watching Kevin Rudd deliver the apology live on a couple of big screens. And yeah, I still remember the way I felt, the emotion that I felt when I heard him say sorry. And even when I talk about it today, I still tear up a little bit because of that memory. It had such a big impact on me.
This is not, as some would argue, a black armband view of history. It's just the truth, the cold, confronting, uncomfortable truth. Facing with it, dealing with it, moving on from it. And until we fully confront that truth, there will always be a shadow hanging over us and our future as a fully united and fully reconciled people. It's time to reconcile. It's time to recognise the injustices of the past. It's time to say sorry. It's time to move forward together. To the stolen generations, I say the following. As Prime Minister of Australia, I am sorry. On behalf of the Government of Australia, I am sorry. On behalf of the Parliament of Australia, I am sorry. And I offer you this apology without qualification. We apologise for the hurt, the pain and suffering we, the Parliament, have caused you by the laws that previous parliaments have enacted. We apologise for the indignity, the degradation and the humiliation these laws embodied. We offer this apology to the mothers, the fathers, the brothers, the sisters, the families and the communities whose lives were ripped apart by the actions of successive governments under successive parliaments.
What happened when he said sorry in that room, in that hall, was just this outpouring of, there were tears, there were embraces. There were Aboriginal people and non-Aboriginal people hugging and shaking hands. There was a lot of clapping and cheering, and it was a very significant moment. And I don't think I realised how significant and impactful it was until I heard those words, sorry, and then I saw people's reactions. And I suspect that that's, something that was mirrored around the country.
It had a magic effect on the day, on a personal level, on a political level, and no one could argue any longer that it wasn't a rational thing to do, to apologise to Aboriginal people who were harmed, and that's really Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who were harmed by those practices of child removal. And really, do you find, as in the Healing Foundation and working with survivors, that it's almost every single Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander person in some way touched or affected by those practices?
I don't think I know an Aboriginal person that doesn't have some history in their family of the stolen generations. When the Bring Them Home inquiry was carried out in the late 90s, the inquiry estimated somewhere between 1 in 10 or 1 in 3 Aboriginal children removed from their families, and that equates to thousands of children. And that's through the course of the very early in the 20th century, right up until the 1970s. And that's the era we refer to as the stolen generations period. And it is the impact of those practices has been profound. It's been far-reaching, and the trauma generated by those actions of forcibly removing children from their families, from their communities, their culture, and placing them in institutions where they weren't nurtured, they weren't loved, has had an ongoing impact on those stolen generations, but also on their families, on their descendants, and also into the broader Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community. We are still dealing with the legacy of the trauma caused by those past practices.
It did. It broke individuals, and in so doing, it has an effect on their children. And when broken people have children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, it can pass that kind of, that trauma can be inherited, and it's not a figment of our imaginations. It really does occur.
Look, trauma is very real. It impacts on the way people think and behave. People who are living with trauma, they're often in a heightened state of vigilance and awareness. They're always on the lookout for danger, so they're very suspicious. They're quick to anger often. We see many people who are affected by trauma self-medicating with alcohol and drugs, and we see the impact of violence in our communities. And these are part of the legacy of removing children from their families, but the ongoing impact of other policies in other areas, you know, poor health, mental health, all of these things have created a layering of trauma from one generation to the next. And when children are growing up in families that are dealing with trauma, well, those children, they take on that trauma, and they take it on through witnessing and experience the behaviour of their parents and other family members, but they also experienced trauma from hearing the stories of the past. And, you know, that legacy continues today. And trauma is very much at the heart of many of the social and health challenges that we have in our communities today. And, you know, this 10th anniversary, whilst we want to celebrate the apology itself, its impact for stolen generations and survivors, and also for the broader Australian community, because it's a great moment for Australia, it's also a time to reflect and focus on, you know, what still needs to be done to overcome the disadvantages in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities.
Last year, I had the privilege of being able to speak to two men who were sent to the Kinchula Boys Home separately, some years apart. But hearing their story of, it took a long time, but they found their way, their path to recovery. Not that they could ever recover from the past, but to find a way through it. But what was amazing about that interview that I had with those two men was it was like a roller coaster. There were incredibly dark moments, and then in an instant it would change, and then they would remember something beautiful about their childhood, or something poignant. And that seemed to me to set up so much of how stolen generation survivors see the world. It's sometimes it's dark, but then there's always the possibility of light. Is that something that you found in working with people who survived the stolen generations?
Yeah, look, I think when you hear those personal stories, and particularly Kinchula Boys Home story, it's horrific what was the treatment that they were subjected to. when they were supposed to be in the care of the state or in care of an institution. And it's not hard to project yourself into that environment and imagine yourself as a child going through some of the physical and psychological torments that they went through. And the fact that many of them, you know, have survived, I mean, there many have passed away, of course, but those people that have survived that and come out the other end, it's just a tribute to their tenacity and determination. And they don't come out unscathed, of course, because trauma doesn't resolve easily. And, you know, what I guess the conversations you've just described is something that we see all the time, that people move very quickly from one state to another. And, you know, their trauma is very easily triggered. It can be triggered by dreams or just seeing people that they were institutionalized with, or it can be a particular word or being in a particular place that reminds them of what they've been through, and that can cause them to become very emotional. But the Kinchula boys have, they've gone on a journey together and they've created their own organisation. They're establishing their own healing centre and healing place, you know, and that's really, really important to them, how they refer to the gates of Kinchula as the gates of hell. But, you know, they're reimagining and reinventing that experience to use it as a touchstone for what they've, you know, what they've been able to conquer and beat. And I think the rest of us have to learn from their strength and their ability to heal. And that's the sort of work the Healing Foundation has been doing with Stolen Generations over the last 7 or 8 years, is really trying to unpack, understand the impact of trauma on them, but also to work with Stolen Generations to create opportunities to heal and find out what works to help people overcome and recover from that trauma and, start to restore well-being into their lives.
I guess many people thought that the matter of the Stolen Generations could be settled or resolved, that it was settled or resolved in the National Apology. I think it had become such a political football, really, if you take it back to a non-apology for so many years and then an apology delivered in the first term of the new government of Kevin Rudd. I mean, he stood on that. He was elected on that promise. Mm. And it came very quickly in 2008. Do you think that perhaps people thought the matter was going to be easily resolved or easily settled in the same way that trauma can't easily be resolved? But I do believe that perhaps there was a perception that in an apology that would be the end of it.
Oh, I think in some quarters that's true. I think people thought that once the Prime Minister and the Australian Parliament had, you know, said sorry and apologised, that everyone would be able to get on with their lives. But trauma doesn't work like that. And healing doesn't work like that. The apology was critically important to the healing process, and it was the start of the healing process. So, you know, it was really important. And Stolen Generations really have a lot of respect for Kevin Rudd, and they value the apology that he gave. But many of them say that it was just the beginning of the journey. There's still unfinished business from the Bring Them Home report, and still unfinished business for many Stolen Generations, and that comes in opportunities to access healing services and healing processes, reparations scheme to help them, support them and their families going forward. And particularly now, as Stolen Generations are getting older, is going into aged care and, what you know, trying to really making sure that they're looked after, because many of them facing the prospect of being reinstitutionalised in aged care facilities. So there's lots of unfinished business for Stolen Generations. And I suspect you're right. I think there are sections of the community to say, well, we've said sorry, you should get over it. But trauma doesn't resolve. The trauma we're seeing and dealing with in our communities has been built up over generations, and it's going to take generations to heal it. And, you know, I think the work of the Healing Foundation and what we've been able to do to engage with Stolen Generations has helped us understand that better, understand how collective healing works for members of the Stolen Generations that were institutionalised together, that those kids they were in those institutions with are their family, and being together helps them to heal, and it helps them to have a positive view of the future.
You mentioned an interesting aspect. That's the reinstitutionalisation. And as members of the Stolen Generations age, they will have, some of them, the only path for them is to go into some form of care, institutional care in homes. Also, this issue of reparations, it hasn't gone away.
What the Healing Foundation did last year was the 20th anniversary of the Bringing Them Home report. We work with Stolen Generations members and organisations and our own Stolen Generations reference group to put a document to the Prime Minister. We handed it to the Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition on May 22nd of last year. And that report was contained an action plan for healing for Stolen Generations. And it was really the Stolen Generations voice talking to government, and there were four key priorities at that point that we were chasing and we were supporting. And one was for a needs analysis so that we could understand the numbers of Stolen Generations people we're currently dealing with and what their current needs are, particularly as they're an ageing group in our community. We also called for a national reparations scheme to be established, trauma-informed resources, training resources for people working in aged care. So people that would be working with Stolen Generations in aged care facilities would get some support to understand the impact of trauma and be able to provide a good service to people if they do have to go back into an institution, and for a national approach, a national strategy to tackle intergenerational trauma. So they were the four key prongs. And we did get a response from the government, from Prime Minister and Cabinet. So they, you know, we've started to do some work with them about better understanding the needs of the Stolen Generations and where they are, how many of them there are, and whereabouts they are in the nation. So, and that's really important work, and we're close to presenting that back to the government. But if we can establish the numbers of Stolen Generations, and it gives the government the potential to look at a reparations scheme specifically for Stolen Generations. And that scheme does include, you know, financial redress. It does include other things like access to healing services, you know, doing some additional work around supporting the work of the link-ups to ensure family reunions can take place, and giving people access to their records. There's a range of issues in that that are contained in that. So I guess, you know, we have seen some good reparation schemes come out of New South Wales and South Australia. Probably the New South Wales one is the best one that we've seen, and that was announced in December 2016. And they've already paid out around $20 million, I think, in reparations. So it's, you know, there may be an appetite there, but we need a national scheme because there's too many people that miss out. And, you know, we want to have an equity. There needs to be equity in it, and that's why we're doing that work and trying to establish the numbers of Stolen Generations and where they are, so that perhaps that can provide the Commonwealth with the opportunity to provide some leadership in establishing a national scheme. And we've seen a national reparation scheme attached to the Royal Commission into Institutional Child Sexual Abuse. So, you know, it's not, maybe 20 years ago, it was probably a pipe dream to even think about compensation and reparations, but maybe in today's climate there may be an appetite for government to provide the leadership that's required.
It reminds me of something that Archie Roach said this very many years ago. It was actually on this program about more than 20 years ago. He said, they don't have enough money. They don't have enough money. They have to pay me, my children, my grandchildren, all the generations, because the effects ripple out and they're long lasting. So this idea that money could fix the problem or heal someone completely is not something that members of the Stolen Generations themselves believe.
Not necessarily. I think it's part of our system, though. It's part of the justice system. When somebody is, you know, a wrong is done to somebody, they can be compensated for it. And it doesn't, you know, what amount of money could you give that would give someone back their childhood? There's nothing. But, you know, I think it's a gesture that can be made by a nation. And you know, some of the New South Wales scheme was providing up to $75,000 for people. And, you know, people have, you know, some of the older people were given priority. So they've been able to receive their money, and it's made some difference for them. Some of them have done something that they've never done, like take a holiday. Other people are investing it for their children and their grandchildren. So it does help. It does help in some ways, but it will never heal, you know, the atrocities of, you know, children being forcibly taken from their families. There's, you know, the forgotten people in the whole process are the people that were left behind in communities. You know, the mothers and the fathers and the other family members that lost their children. And in some communities it was, you know, it was most of the children were taken. And I don't know how we can even compensate that, but it's really important for Australia as a nation to connect with that story, hear those stories, and just use our imaginations and use our empathy as human beings to try and imagine what that was like, and have some compassion for members of the Stolen Generations and their families, and, you know, to support them, to support and honour their story, honour their struggle, their resilience, their strength, to learn from what they've been through, learn about how trauma impacts on people, how it changes their lives forever, and what we need to do to heal it. And, you know, as a nation, we can, you know, we can start that process, we can keep that process going. But you're right, I don't think there's any amount of money that could give anyone back their childhood. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't do it.
Richard Weston, the Chief Executive Officer of the Healing Foundation, the national organisation set up after the apology. And the Healing Foundation marks the apology every year.